one person that's made the trip out. She's covered a lot of Grand Slams. She's made a lot of trips to Melbourne. She is from Canada. She's one of the great tennis journalists going around. You can follow her on Twitter at Open Court. And she's got her finger on the pulse day in, day out with the wonderful world of tennis. And there is never a shortage of tennis news on and off the court. Stephanie Miles, it's great to have you on SCN and welcome back to Melbourne.
Thank you very much. I'm sure I'll be enjoying it shortly.
No, I just was monitoring your Twitter feed. You had your little mini nap. I mean, how are you sort of working these days, Stephanie, being in quarantine and trying to get into some sort of routine?
Well, I didn't actually end up having the nap because I knew the minute I thought about doing it that the testing people would come to the door, and that's exactly what happened.
On cue.
And then the window was too short before your call, so I'll have it after. I have an open schedule.
Hey, Stephanie, just tell us about the process for you to decide to make the long trip to Australia, because there's quite a few of the well-known tennis journalists who have opted not to come out this year. How did that decision sort of land for you in the end, and was it a clear decision all along that I want to get to Australia, or were you maybe umming and ahhing this time around just considering the world we're in?
Look, a lot of things went through my head, and anybody, you know, around me, friends, family, who heard I was going, it was either, oh, that's cool, or are you crazy? And so there was sort of both of those things mixed together. You know, here's the thing. It was unclear until I got on the last charter flight from Dubai whether I was even going to make it. So, you know, when I determined that I was going to try, because look, when you're a freelance journalist and I do a lot of tennis stuff, TV stuff, you know, I don't make a living when I'm home. So if it was doable, if it seemed, you know, reasonable, or mostly doable, I was going to try to do it. But it was very complicated, and it took me about 4 days to get here. And, once I decided to do it, then I just kind of went full steam ahead to see if I could plan it so it would work out. And the plus side of it, just because of the fact that Melbourne is so COVID-free, is that coming here just gives you just a whole lot more opportunities to talk to people and, you know, do interviews and do all this stuff that, you know, all the people who were sitting there on the Zoom calls are not going to have, and write original stories that nobody else has. And that's all, you know, as a journalist, that's what you want to do. You want to write things that nobody else can write, and you want to see and, you know, experience things for yourself. So it worked out. I made it. It wasn't easy, but I'm awfully glad to be here.
I fully understand that as someone who's in that boat where you've got to travel and be on the ground, and it's good for me for 1 month of the year, but for the other 11 months, I'm a long way from the tennis epicenter. So totally get that from a content point of view. I mean, I follow you on Twitter. You've got your finger on the pulse. You know everything that's happening in the world of tennis on a day-to-day basis, Stephanie. And, you know, I read an article from Ben Rothenberg, a little guest column in the Sydney Morning Herald today, just talking about the tennis players, you know, being worldly in the fact that they travel all around the globe, but because they're in this sort of really blinkers-on bubble most of the time, they're maybe not au fait with everything that's happening around the world, to all the cities they travel. I mean, clearly you knew the situation here in Melbourne and Victoria and what we'd been through, but how much of the tennis players' fraternity do you think that applies to, or do you think there's a lot of them who clearly we're aware of the situation, the risks, the things that could happen? Where do you sort of sit on that?
It's complicated, you know. I mean, I think he sort of broke it down on, you know, in his own perspective, but he's been fairly clear all this time that he doesn't really think that tennis tournaments should be going on until the pandemic is over. So, you know, that's his opinion, and, you know, I certainly respect it. It's a complex thing because, generally speaking, you know, I'm not particularly, I don't go out of my way to be not critical of tennis federations and organizations when I feel it's warranted. You know, I'm not on their side. As far as the players go, look, everybody who's putting up those ridiculous practice photos and group pics without masks, you know, I put them right up there on my Twitter, even if it doesn't necessarily serve my purpose. Yeah. But in this case, I feel like the players deserve a certain amount of sympathy on some level, not the yahoos who are trying to like chat in the hallways and, you know, all this other kind of stuff, but just in general. And at the same time, You know, I feel as though the Melburnians deserve a fair amount of sympathy as well because they went through a tough time. Now, on both sides, there are some caveats. With the Melburnians, particularly the ones who've been really ripping the players on Twitter and going on and on about things, I feel like they've been quite blinkered because, I'll tell you what, I mean, there's a curfew and there's a big lockdown or whatever going on where I live right now. And we've all struggled with it. And just because our countries haven't handled, you know, the virus as well for various reasons, geography, population, yeah, you know, so many different politics, so many different reasons, it does not mean that we have not all also suffered just as much. And in countries other than here, where there have been so many more people dying, many more of us have been touched personally by people we care about dying and dying alone. So I find that attitude a little bit off-putting, because if you're going to accuse the tennis players of being so, you know, blinkered and kind of into their own thing and unaware of what's going on here, then you have to extend that courtesy on the other side of the thing as well. And as far as the tennis players go, look, you know, the communication could have been better. I think that the WTA and the ATP should have very much emphasized to all of their members saying, look, you're going to be bored. There are going to be things that aren't going to be to your taste, but stay off the social media with this stuff in respect to the people who are hosting you and giving you this opportunity to make a living, right? But they're young. They are self-absorbed in the sense that it's an individual sport, and they have spent their whole lives with, you know, things revolving around themselves. And also, they go to so many different countries that I'm not sure it's fair to necessarily expect them to start doing all this research before they go into each country and check, you know, the history of the pandemic in that country. Like, it's asking a lot. You know what I mean?
Yep. I think it's a well-rounded view from a Melburnian's perspective and a tennis player's perspective. And I think if everyone takes a deep breath, but you're living and breathing the quarantine. I mean, from what we've heard in the build-up, Stephanie, and what we've heard since everyone, the whole international tennis family has arrived on the ground in Melbourne in the last 5 days, that this is a very tightly run ship. Can you just give us your own take, day-to-day? I mean, you as a journalist are here being tested as well as the players and confined to your room. Can you give us a feel of the conditions?
Sure. You know, I decided before I even came here, well, first of all, being stuck in my room is not a whole lot different than the two quarantines I did going home after, you know, the two times that I have left, or basically my whole existence since March. You know, we've all been super careful. So it's not like I've been running around. So that part of it doesn't change, other than, you know, I'm not sleeping in my bed with my lovely husband over here. And also, you know, I can't move around a few other rooms in my house. But here's what I would say. From what I've been reading in the Aussie papers, and I've been reading them for months leading up to this, this AO quarantine is certainly at a higher level than the regular hotel quarantine. I mean, except for the fact that you can't have your friends drop care packages off for you. That's not allowed. But look, you know, I walked in the door. There was a big box from a sponsor or somebody full of nuts and almonds and, you know, sesame bars and snacks and all this kind of stuff. And yesterday there was a fruit box that arrived from Tennis Australia. There's, you know, a coffee, you know, filter coffee thing was in the room. You know, the food is, well, it was a little, the first day was they were a little disorganized, but, you know, it's coming in a timely fashion. It is pretty good. I mean, I'm eating salads, Brett. You know, I don't make salads at home because it's too much work to clean all the vegetables. And everything is quite good. There was only this one dodgy looking thing right at the beginning, which turned out to be a rice pudding, which looked like no rice pudding I've ever seen. It was extremely white. That was the one dodgy thing. But again, you know, we had a menu that was set that we had to fill out. There's a choice of two things per day, which we had to fill out last Saturday for the whole 2 weeks. So you look through it, and if something that particular day doesn't look appealing, you know, you order Uber Eats. I mean, obviously the players get a per diem, so that's all paid for, but I'm happy to spend a few bucks you know, to have a decent meal. It's absolutely fine. And I don't think we could have been treated any better, except for the Wi-Fi in my hotel is not working. But I solved that with a few bucks and, and in the order of a SIM card. So that was my only stress thing. It's just, but I don't have to train to prepare for a Grand Slam. So it's different for me. And I was not ever going to get out of the room regardless. So that was a given. And we were supposed to be tested on day three for the first time, which was yesterday. But in fact, I've been tested every day so far. Mm. They changed that on the fly,
yep.
You know, once we arrived. And that's fine. I mean, I've had plenty of tests. It's a test. No big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking to Stephanie Miles, freelance journalist. You can follow Stephanie on Twitter at Open Court and read all her great content and follow all her tennis news right throughout the year. So, Stephanie, just while I've got you for a couple more minutes here, just the big picture of tennis, and you write about it a lot, and obviously the game is at a very interesting stage with the tours, and the pandemic has maybe brought on some discussions a little forward than what they have been. There was talk last year, can the tours possibly merge down the track? What is the plan? What is the plan for the ATP under Andrea Gaudenzi? He's walked into bushfires and a pandemic in his first 12 to 15 months in charge. You know, the next generation, you know, Pastor, the big three men's tennis, and just how competitive the global sporting landscape is. You know, tennis has got to keep evolving. What about just your view on the big picture of the game and the issues facing it?
Well, the whole merger idea, I'm not even sure that was... There was a lot of lip service being paid to that, but I'm not sure that it, despite Roger Federer tweeting about it, I don't think it was ever a really serious thing, and I don't think it's really doable. The two tours, you know, it all comes down to money, and the two tours are completely separate businesses in terms of their scope, in terms of the revenue they generate, in terms of the money they pay their players. It is, you know, it's not really a feasible thing. I mean, I wish that they would have joint marketing campaigns, especially around joint events. But, you know, I don't find the marketing campaigns to be particularly compelling anyway, so maybe that whole thing needs a rethink. It's going to be a very, very interesting time after, you know, after the big three go. I think it's going to be fine. I just think it's going to be different. Because you look at all of the young players who are in that 20 to 23 age group, there's so many of them, and they all appeal to different people, and a lot of them are, you know, very exciting, and some of them are going to start winning slams, and so I think that it's not going to be as focused at the top. I think it could be more well-rounded. You know, as far as Gaudenzi's plan goes, it's an interesting thing, because when he first came in, he obviously was hired on the basis of having this plan, and it's very data-driven, and certainly, you know, the betting stuff is involved in there, and just basically about raising revenue. And at the time, a lot of the, you know, the more rebellious faction on the Players Council, led by Novak Djokovic, said, "Well, look, I've talked to him, and I like his plan, and I'm quite happy to give him a year or whatever it is to try to implement it, you know, give him an opportunity to do what he came in to do." And then, again, as you said, you know, bush fires came in, and then this pandemic. And then these guys all quit because they're, well, like, this isn't working for us anymore. And I think that that's basically going back on your word, in a sense, because, you know, there were a lot of people who were very anxious to get the previous CEO, Kermode, out because they felt that he was too biased towards the tournaments, or whatever their reasons were for not, you know, for wanting him gone and somebody new in. Well, when you get somebody new in, you have to give them a chance.
Yep.
And if you're going to be on the council, you have to give them the opportunity to try to implement this stuff and work for the changes that you want within the council, instead of taking your toys and go home. And I think that the result of it is that they're going to spend more time and energy, you know, battling within themselves instead of fighting for the big picture for everybody. Because if you want more revenue, the slams are the ones who are having all the revenue they're not distributing to the players. Mm. It's not the ATP. Yep. You know what I mean? The slams are where all the money is.
Yep.
So why would you be fighting within your own organization instead of, just, you know, getting it there to fight the real bad guy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no doubt. There's plenty to play out, and we need probably another hour to dissect all that, but it's a fascinating space. And just quickly, from a Canadian point of view, you've got some amazing young talent, but gee, fingers crossed, Bianca Andreescu can get out on court this year. I mean, when she plays Stephanie, she wins. She wins big titles. We've seen that with her win at the US Open, Indian Wells, but she's been ravaged with injury. Do you feel confident that she can get some continuity and play a fair bit this year?
You know what? I really don't, because it's unknown. I mean, the thing is, she came out last year and won some big titles in between injuries and whatever, but certainly she doesn't have a history of doing that. You know what I mean? She came, and it's going to be a very, very different landscape for her in 2021, because first of all, everybody's going to be seeing her coming. Secondly, she hasn't played since October 2019, and she's put all this pressure and come down to Australia to make her return. She could have played Abu Dhabi before flying down here, even in doubles, you know, even if she lost a round. Yeah. And she was in Abu Dhabi, and she didn't play. So the management of the whole thing, you know, I don't know. It all seems a little bit, and it's all been quite mysterious as well. I mean, I hope she does, but nothing in her history has indicated that she's able to remain injury-free for very long. Now, has she made some changes? I'm sure. You know, I'm sure they're trying to find good solutions to it. But I think with her, it's very, very much still to be discovered. And I'll tell you what, the first thing that goes is confidence. And when you go out there and you haven't played in a year and a half, that's a tough one.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, she's an enormous talent. She's got a bit of swagger, but we just want to see her out there. Whether we do, we're going to have to wait and see. Stephanie, thank you for your insights. We'll no doubt see you on the ground at Melbourne Park for what, hopefully, once this is all... we move on from the quarantine situation. Hopefully we see some great tennis, but appreciate your insights from someone that's travelled the globe a lot covering the world of tennis.
Sure, thanks for having me. And I'll tell you what, it's going to be pretty exciting for everybody to have some fans around.